here we are communicating with progressives. I get to introduce Jamie DeMarco, who coordinates and assists efforts across the United States to advocate for carbon pricing legislation that matches the values of the Citizens Climate Lobby. While CCL remains laser focused on passing a national carbon fee and dividend legislation, there is growing grassroots energy to work towards state level carbon pricing policies. Jamie is dedicated to passing state level legislation that will serve as a model and inspiration for national lawmakers. Before joining Citizens Climate Lobby, Jamie worked on the Maryland Clean Energy Jobs Campaign, trying to pass legislation in Maryland that would expand renewable electricity in the state by 50% to 50% by 2030. A Quaker, Jamie has also worked at the Friends Committee on National Legislation, the Quaker lobby organization that created the Gibson Resolution. So without further ado, Jamie, take it away.
Thank you so much. And I'm really glad to be on the call with everyone. I'm just going to quickly say what I'm going to cover. We're first going to talk about the role that CCL has in the larger movement ecosystem. We're going to talk about how to connect with a progressive member of Congress. We're going to talk about what CCL National is doing with other organizations at the national level. We're going to go over some Energy Innovation Act endorsements and how to get them. And we're going to talk specifically about communicating with environmental justice communities. We're going to dive right in. So first of all, we are part of a movement. And a movement is like an ecosystem. This is a metaphor that Dani Richter of Citizens Climate Lobby talks a lot about. And just like in an ecosystem, there's a lot of different species that each fill a different role. And then each role, when you combine them, creates a larger ecosystem. In the same way, a movement has a lot of different organizations, and each organization fills a different role of doing something. And it is the sort of meta culmination of all of those interactions of the individual organizations with their own niche that creates the movement. And Citizens Climate Lobby's niche has been to create bipartisan policy solutions at the national level that we can pass. And there's lots of other important work going on, whether it be stopping pipelines and harmful infrastructure at the local level, or trying to, like Sunrise, pass a Green New Deal or create momentum for a Green New Deal. Those are all important things and slightly different than what we do. We try to find common ground and respectful dialogue between people who disagree in order to build common cause for climate solutions. And we've been incredibly effective. 5 years ago, you couldn't find a single congressional Republican who would talk to the press and say humans are definitely causing climate change. And today, you can't find a single congressional Republican who will talk to the press and say humans are definitely not causing climate change. So there's been a complete 180, and it's because of respectful dialogue and not just shutting people out and calling people deniers and saying, I don't want to talk to you, but sitting down at the table, asking what is causing people to have doubts and then addressing those concerns. But part of what this means is that some people, we interact with other people and other organizations that have other goals. And we are sometimes criticized for not sort of being progressive enough or not condemning conservatives enough. We get it both ways. And we know who we are and we know what we're doing. And that's part of the context for the rest of this conversation. So we have to connect with progressive members of Congress. You know, Republicans are going to be a big part of solving the climate solution, we know, and making sure that it is a long-term enduring solution. But at the same time, we need progressive support. And a lot of Citizens Climate Lobby members are talking to progressive members of Congress, trying to get them to co-sponsor. And it's like, why won't you co-sponsor this bill that addresses climate change? What is going on? And the first thing to remember, as with all things Citizens Climate Lobby, is that we are here to connect. Citizens Climate Lobby says often that we are betting everything on relationship. And relationship really matters. If you think about it, lobbyists for special interests get paid absurd amounts of money because everyone who holds power knows that relationships have tremendous power and that people who have relationships with members of Congress hold tremendous power. So the stronger we can make those relationships, the better. So before we get into details of policy, of what the Green New Deal has, what HR 763 has, what regulatory pause is, before any of that, we always try to begin with connecting and listening and not going in with our facts. Well, we have our facts, of course, but we try not to shove that down people's throats when they're not ready for it, and just to start with a conversation and listen, listen, listen. And this is, I think, a really cool little Venn diagram that the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, which we are supporting, has 81 co-sponsors. And there are 97 members of Congress who are in the Progressive Caucus, the Congressional Progressive Caucus. And there are 40 who are in both groups. So about half of the co-sponsors of the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, which is the bill that CCL advocates for, are also members of the Progressive Caucus. And this is exciting because we've got a lot of progressive members. GovTrax does a sort of mathematical analysis of members of Congress to see who is how progressive. And Barbara Lee is mathematically the most progressive member of Congress, and she is on this bill. So I think that is a big endorsement. But we can also see that there's a lot of room to grow. Like, we could get 50 more co-sponsors on this bill if we learned better how to communicate with other progressive members of Congress. And part of the gap in communication is that when progressives look at climate legislation, there's a lot that is going into it. And there's a lot that progressive lawmakers would like to see coming out of climate legislation, and reducing greenhouse gas emissions is just one of those pieces. And this is where we can have some missteps between progressive members of Congress and Citizens Climate Lobby, because Citizens Climate Lobby has always said, we are trying to stay laser focused on climate change, and we don't want to get bogged down in other issues in a way that would make it harder to attract conservative support. And so again, I think in terms of things that you can do, it is acknowledging this gap and acknowledging the importance of all the other work that has to be done in this bigger circle outside of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. We do have to make sure that other local air pollutants are stopped, and that various environmental injustices are righted. But it's not all necessarily going to come in one bill. And Citizens Climate Lobby has secondary asks. And we can talk with members of Congress about potential secondary asks that can get to some of these other things. Of course, we like to stay bipartisan with our secondary asks. But I think acknowledging the difference goes a long way. Hearing the values behind the other policy solutions. So if a progressive member of Congress says, I just want to make sure that this bill doesn't hurt the people in my district financially, and so they want some other provision, like a spending provision to put a project in their district, you can say, I hear that concern. We share that concern. Like, Citizens Climate Lobby is really committed to addressing the concern of protecting low and middle income earners as we pass climate legislation. And that's why we've designed our bill this way. And that's why we have a dividend. And here's how we're addressing that concern. So some of these things, you can match the same value and speak to how you care about the same value. And also, some of the time, members of Congress are just not going to want to co-sponsor this bill. And it's really hard to move people on your own. And we're going to get to that later, because we can never do anything all on our own. Tips include doing your homework, knowing what they've supported. If there's something similar, you can say, well, you've supported this, and we think this is similar in this way. You can listen, listen, listen. In our lobby meetings, we've started a new practice of having someone keep time for how much time us as advocates are speaking versus how much time the lawmaker or the lawmaker staff person is speaking. And we always do better the more time the staff person is speaking. And we try to lead with CCL's values. So connecting not just on the policy specifics, but the values that drive those policy specifics. I like to use the International Panel on Climate Change's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's report that was the report that said we have 12 years to reduce global greenhouse gas emissions 50%, or we lose the opportunity to keep global temperature rise below 1.5 degrees Celsius. And that report is sort of like the Bible to a lot of progressives. Like, people often say, like, you have to believe the science, you have to believe what the IPCC is saying, so we need to take drastic action. The IPCC had this line that said, we need to take unprecedented global mobilization in order to avoid an increase above 1.5 degrees Celsius. And so people quote that all the time. They say, this is a line that the report says we have to do this. But that report also says we need a price on carbon. It says that pricing carbon is the central solution to meeting the climate crisis. And so that is really useful to reference, and I do it a lot. We like to use the yes and approach. If someone says, I think legislation should have this, we try not to say like, no, it shouldn't. We try to say, yes, we should have legislation that does that. And we should also have the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. Like, this bill is going to help other bills and other climate policies get passed. And our last thing is, we always appreciate, part of doing your homework is every meeting we start with a thank you for something concrete that that member has done. And if you really can't find a single thing that you're grateful to, you just thank them for having the meeting. But whatever, we're not the kind of group that is going to demand more and shout at you until you give us more. We're going to be the group that appreciates whatever you give, and then keep asking you for more very politely. So I talked earlier about how there's just, in some meetings, there's nothing that you can say that would get a member of Congress to support the bill. And that's because we don't speak for everyone in the district. And they, as members of Congress, have to represent everyone in the district. So they go, they have to hear what other voices have to say. And that's why Citizens Climate Lobby has such a robust endorsement campaign. I don't know, Tamara, if you're able to drop the link in the chat to the page on our website that covers endorsements, but it is really impressive and covers a lot. And you too can go, one of the best things to do is, if you're having trouble getting a progressive member of Congress to co-sponsor the bill, instead of just going back to that member and having the same conversation over and over, staying in conversation is really important. But if the conversation isn't going anywhere, you can go to the district and get organizations in the district to endorse, and then go back with the sort of gravitational mass of support that would be harder for them to resist. And getting endorsements is tricky. There's a few pro tips and things to be careful of. I especially like to be careful when reaching out to other environmental organizations and asking them to endorse. A lot of environmental organizations have been doing a lot of really important work. I'm going to get to this picture in a second. I swear I'm going to explain what this is about. Have been doing a lot of really important work and filling other roles in the ecosystem for a long time. And sometimes I have found myself going to other organizations and asking them to support the bill. And that sort of feels like going to a neighbor who you don't know, knocking on their door and asking them to help you fix your deck. It's like, why would I go help you fix your deck? Like, I have all these other things that I was planning to do with my day, and that's kind of weird that you're asking me. And so we like to lead with relationship. In the same way that we lead with relationship with members of Congress, we like to lead in relationship with other organizations, particularly environmental and climate organizations, which have put a lot of thought into what policies they do and don't endorse. Most other groups have heard of this policy. Most other groups, if you reach out to them, will have had an opinion. And if they haven't endorsed, there's a reason for that, in the climate space at least. So I like to say, knock on your neighbor climate advocate's door and say, would you like to get coffee sometime? I'd like to get to know you better. We're in this space together, neighbor. And then if you have years of relationship and good connection and positive relationship with a neighbor, it's very normal to knock on your neighbor who you know's door and say, hey, I'm doing something with my deck in the backyard. Can you help? So again, that's speaking to the importance of leading with relationship when getting endorsements, specifically in the climate and environmental space. And the other thing I like to say about talking about the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act is that we should talk about features and not benefit. Or sorry, we should talk about benefits and not features. And I think this diagram is a good example of an umbrella. Features of an umbrella are that it's cloth. It might be unbreakable and the handle's made of wood. Wow, those are great features, but it doesn't really make me want to buy an umbrella. Why do I want one? A better way to make someone want an umbrella is to tell you that if you had this, you would stay dry when it rains and you wouldn't get sunburnt when it's sunny. Like, wow, those are things that I want. I don't like being wet when I don't want to be, and I don't like being sunburned. And I think analogous to the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, a lot of times when we talk about the bill, we start with features and we say, okay, It's going to put a price on carbon. It's going to start at $15 per ton, go up $10 per ton, unless we don't meet our goals, and it's going to go by 15, and there's going to be a dividend that's going to be the same for everybody, and low-income people are going to come out ahead. Those are all sort of features of the bill. Benefits of the bill are that it will reduce all U.S. greenhouse gas emissions 40% in 12 years, pretty close to what the IPCC says is necessary, and that it will protect low and middle income earners and prevent about 290,000 deaths, premature deaths from local air pollution. So those are all incredible benefits of the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, and I encourage people to lead with those. This is getting back to the door knocking, but just remember, people over policy. So much more important than what the policy actually says is whether the person you're talking to likes you. Because if they don't like you, you can have a really good policy and they're just not going to want to give you what you want. People dig in the trenches very instinctively, and relationships matter. Ask what other groups are doing. Be interested, not just interesting. Have humility, authenticity, and demonstrate long-term commitments. Focused on a shared vision for a carbon-free future, even if you disagree on specific policies, and don't assume that the Energy Innovation Act is the best or only solution. So relationships matter. And the other thing I want to say is not to put all your eggs in one basket. I have a lot of conversations with people who are just struggling so hard to get a specific organization to endorse. They say, I've tried this, I've tried that, I've tried this, nothing works. And my advice is to move on. There's a lot of organizations out there, and you can waste a lot of capacity sort of chasing the white whale of a local chapter of something who is never going to endorse. So don't get hung up on one organization. Some people just don't want to support this bill, and that's okay. You're never going to find one specific policy that everyone likes. That's impossible. So reach out to a variety of local organizations and make sure to coordinate so you're not double dipping and stepping on people's toes. And reach out to a lot of different organizations. I know I said before to like lead with a like coffee and relationship, but I also think that scale matters. If you reach out to 10 organizations and 1% say yes, then you have no endorsements. But if you reach out to 200 organizations and 1% say yes, then what's that, two? Two organizations. And if you reach 1,000, then that's 10 organizations. So scale just sort of matters. Some people are not going to say yes, but a lot of people are. And the number one thing to get people to say yes is to ask them. So this is a diagram. This is a spreadsheet that I have from a campaign I worked on in Maryland, where we got 663 different organizations to endorse our climate policy. And this was the spreadsheet where I just had this long, long list that went on for hundreds and hundreds of cells with all the different organizations we could think of, their name and contact. I have their contact blocked out here. And then I had a column for like, what's the next time I'm going to reach out to them? And what's the next thing I'm going to do on that date? And I would just go through this doc day after day and like follow up with all of these organizations. And we got to 663. Relationship matters and scale matters. So be personal and achieve scale. Of course, that's impossible. You can't do both. But we here at CCL often do the impossible. So I want to pick up the pace a little bit because I'm running a little over the time that I was hoping for myself. But covering what CCL National is doing, a lot of people, I know before I joined staff at CCL, I would often think to myself, if only all the climate groups in the country would just get together and talk to each other and like come up with some kind of coherent plan or have some kind of organizational structure to themselves. What I didn't know is that that does exist and that is happening and CCL is part of it. So we participate in the United States Climate Action Network, which is the national coalition of groups that work on climate change and environmental issues. And we don't all advocate for the same policy because there isn't agreement, but we're in conversation and we let each other know what we're going to do. And oftentimes groups that are silent on HR 763 are silent because we convinced them to be silent because they weren't going to be supportive. So at least they're not going to oppose. We also hold specific coalition calls. We have one tomorrow for all the organizations that are working on HR 763 and putting institutional capacity into getting the bill passed, because we're not the only ones. And so we have calls with other groups where we keep that going. For national groups, that is led up by my colleague Taylor, And if you have a connection or an interest in reaching out to a national group, you should contact Taylor before doing that, because like I said, we don't want to double dip. So speaking about environmental justice, one of the groups that we often go to seeking endorsements is environmental justice communities. And those are really hard conversations, because there is, just to be frank, a lot of people in the environmental justice community who don't like any form of carbon pricing, and for very valid reasons. I am a firm believer that not every carbon pricing bill is created equal, that lots of different bills deserve their own consideration. But that is just important framing to go into environmental justice conversations with. I just wanted to start with this quote that about what climate justice is. And it says, climate justice links human rights and development to achieve a human-centered approach, safeguarding the rights of the most vulnerable and sharing the burdens and benefits of climate change and its resolution equitably and fairly. Climate justice is informed by science, responds to the science, and acknowledges the need for equitable stewardship of the world's resources. Mark Reynolds, the executive director of Citizens Climate Lobby, told me just this week, or maybe it was last week, he was talking to an environmental justice leader who told him, we don't care about global emissions. We are dying from local air pollutants. The danger that we're facing is so much more immediate and acute from these other environmental factors that reducing this sort of global number that we measure on a mountaintop in Hawaii is not what we're showing up every day to fight against or fight for. And I think that's important to keep in mind. This is another good quote with a beautiful image. It says, environmental justice is our cry of defiance against the onslaught of oppressive toxins and toxic oppressions that threatened to submerge our homes. And I think this is especially important with the sort of moral moment that we're having in the movement for Black lives in the country right now, that there's a lot of hard conversations that people are having and a lot of oppressions that have been going on for a long time that are being overturned. And I would just emphasize again that as you start to have environmental justice conversations, you absolutely begin with connecting and not communicating. I think the last thing you should do is reach out to a local organization that is led by people of color fighting local pollutants or some kind of environmental justice organization and ask for an endorsement of HR 763. I would almost always in that situation ask, like, what campaign are you working on and how can I help? And build years of relationship. And it is only when people see you showing up year after year for the causes that matter on the ground for people, that they will begin to trust you and know that you aren't trying to pull a fast one. Because a lot of these communities have had a lot pulled over, pulled on them, and been exploited by a lot of people who look like me. So that is just a major trust issue. And I don't think there's any sort of golden ticket or five-point plan for effectively building trust with environmental justice and frontline communities if you're not part of that community, other than betting everything on relationship and asking and showing up as a sincere human who's not there to as an ambassador for carbon pricing or HR 763, but is just there as a human trying to talk to another human and then see where that goes. Yeah, I'm obviously not even fully able to speak from a place of authority of what works because I am not a frontline community member. The other thing that we do like to highlight is sharing values. That's something we've come back to a few times, that when people talk about concerns they have, speak to underlying values that it's coming from. Like sometimes we'll hear like, well, Republicans or big oil supports a carbon price. And if they support it, we know it's a bad solution. That's something we hear from the progressive side. And we can just try to identify shared values. Like we want to make sure that whatever we do to enact climate change is long lasting and can't just be repealed the next time there's a change in government. And that's what we're trying to ensure. So rather than getting into a fight about whether Republicans are all racist or trying to get in a fight about whether oil companies are pure evil, trying to identify the shared values of seeking a solution and explaining where we're coming from. And you can do the same thing when people talk about how does this relate to the Green New Deal. The leaders of the Sunrise Movement, which along with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have put the Green New Deal on the map, say that carbon pricing is a small part of the Green New Deal, so it can include a carbon tax, but we're not trying to force it there. Again, we're different, filling different niches in the same climate movement, and we're both making the movement stronger. So this is a slide highlighting some of the shared values that we can identify when someone asks how it relates to the Green New Deal. So how can you help? Talking to your progressive member of Congress and always remembering to lead with connection and bet on relationship is a big part of it. On the endorsement side specifically, we ask people to reach out to local organizations rather than a national organization. If there's an organization and it has a local affiliate, go to the local affiliate. If there's a national affiliate and you want to reach out to them, first, you have to go through the DC office staff and Taylor Krause, who maybe, Tamara, if you could put her email in the chat, because we don't want people from all over the country all bugging the same people at national organizations. But at the local level, you are the expert, and you should be taking the lead. And we invite your enthusiasm at the national level. It just needs to be coordinated through Taylor. And the other thing I will say explicitly is that the Sierra Club has asked that we not ask any local Sierra Club chapters to endorse this bill. That's just a policy that they have said for their organization, and we have promised to pass along. So don't ask a Sierra Club chapter. For closing considerations, I just want to say that we are centered in our values of respect, appreciation, and gratitude. Those are the things that have come up throughout all of these topics, and make up the very core of who we are. And not everyone in the movement operates with those, and not everybody should, but that is the role that we are filling. We listen for underlying concerns and identify them in conversation. Someone disagrees with us and tells us why. We don't assume bad intentions. We don't assume that really it's just because they're bought out and this is what their corporate donors are telling them. We assume that the concern they say is real and try to identify the underlying motivation. Above all, we are polite and we leave the door open.
Next slide. We just want to thank you so much for being here, for being committed. It takes a big person to show up and work on climate change and educate yourself, and even bigger person to step forward to that next thing and want to take action on it. So if you do have any questions, the community forum, community.citizensclimate.org/forums, you can get all of your questions answered there. Somebody will respond within 24 hours. If you do have any specific questions about tonight's training, you can email jamie@citizensclimatelobby.org. And with that, we look forward to seeing you guys on future climate advocacy training, core volunteer trainings. Thanks so much for being here. Good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram @CitizensClimate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.